And welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. If this is one of your first times here, I strongly encourage you to attend a service again, because our services can be very different. Sometimes I lead them. I am the Reverend Sandra L. Ingham. Sandy is just fine. Sometimes people from outside our congregation lead our services. Sometimes lay leaders lead our services, but always, every single Sunday, everyone is welcome, no matter where you are on your spiritual journey. You are most welcome to freely think in this congregation of free thinkers. And this morning we will celebrate one of our most famous free thinking ancestors, Norbert Chopek. The opening words, all of the special words this morning, are those of Norbert Chopek. We are not leading a fight just against evil, but also for positive work. We prefer building to destroying. We do not favor dogmas. They are lifeless formulas. Freedom, that's something we get enthusiastic about. Let's free ourselves from superstition and prejudice, and then truth in its full beauty will appear. Reason, that's a big word, but only a few know what reason truly means. Many know the phrase, but don't themselves really think. Tell me, who is the greater, someone who knows a lot or the person who knows how to think? Not only to think, but to act independently and responsibly. Chopek wrote these words in January of 1911 in an issue of Pravda, which was a popular Moravian journal of that time. He wrote these words when he was a Baptist minister. We will learn more about his spiritual journey as we go along this morning. Again, I share Chopek's words with you. But first you need to know that in 1910, he was snubbed by the Unitarians, and I will say more about that later. But almost 11 years after that initial not very good encounter, he had joined a Unitarian church in New Jersey. And in 1921, he was preparing to go back to Czechoslovakia, having spent the years of World War I in this country. So he's giving a farewell address to the people of the Essex County Unitarian Church in New Jersey, and he begins by this: "I thank you for the way you have disappointed me." This is in comparison to the way he was treated over 10 years before. "For I found not only clear heads, but warm hearts too. I liked the sermons, I enjoyed the sweet music, especially I was enthusiastic about my kitties." He had 11 children. "What they told me about their Sunday school and their teachers. It is certainly the best Sunday school I ever saw. But above all, I liked what is so difficult to describe. What is more than a friendly smile, more than a kind word of greeting, is that personal touch of a soul that has a vision. It is the heart of religion in the heart of this congregation." Religion, meaning respect for the sacredness of life. And also, Chopek concludes, "The heart of a church I see in the personal qualities of its members that manifest themselves in all that they do." He could have been describing Prairie. The reading I would like to share with you this morning is written by Barbara Rody, a lay leader in a Unitarian Universalist church. She writes, "My friend Maggie was working in her kitchen one afternoon when she overheard her young son talking with a classmate who had come to play after school. In the midst of milk and cookies, the visitor, who came from a Catholic family, began to talk about communion. "What's communion?" David, her son, asked, as any Unitarian Universalist child would. "Oh," his friend responded, "it's where you go to a special place in the church and they give you bread and wine." David's face lit up with delight and understanding. "Oh, yes," he said, "we have that too, only we call it potluck." I laughed, writes Rody, when Maggie told me that story, but I thought about it often and see a truth in it. I suspect the final supper that Jesus had with his friends resembled a potluck more than the rite of the Eucharist. At times I have experienced a UU potluck that partook of communion, a time when the occasion was infused with love. Not all potlucks are communions, of course. Few are. But then, not all communions are communions. Still, there is a spiritual meeting and nourishment that calls for the name communion. And it bothers me that we have so readily given up the concept as well as the word. Instead of trying to reclaim religious words, to rediscover their underlying meaning, we merely throw them out. I believe there is such a thing as communion, though it is not necessarily a religious rite at the altar of a church. There are times that are truly holy, sacred, Sabbaths. But the setting aside of one day a week and naming it the Sabbath is merely a symbolic reminder of the true Sabbaths of our lives. "My confirmation did not take place when I was 14, she writes, after a class at the Presbyterian Church. "Rather, when I was 59 years old, desperately ill, facing death and excruciating pain, yet embraced by love and intelligence. Everything in which I had professed to trust was verified and strengthened by the experience. I never hesitate to call that my confirmation." I hardly know where to begin with the story of Norbert Chopek. He was such a larger-than-life figure in so many ways. He was, as such people tend to be, way ahead of his time, and I would say that he still is way ahead of the times, human times, that is. Now, I think that I tend to be an optimistic person, but after having read Norbert Fabian Chopek, A Spiritual Journey by Unitarian minister Richard Henry, I don't know if a more optimistic person than Chopek ever lived. Chopek was full of joy. He wanted others to cultivate their capacity for joy. He had a wonderful sense of humor. One day he was walking in, I believe he was in Hamburg, and please excuse my German, which I have none, and he picked up an umbrella that was in the gutter. And it started to rain, so he was quite happy to find the umbrella. And then he tried to use it, and it was broken, so he threw it away. And then he went into a cafe, and he was sitting there, and he was looking out the window, and a little boy came along, took the umbrella out of the cafe, or the trash can, and went in and gave it to Chopek, and said, here's your umbrella. So Chopek chuckled, and then he decided he'd play a trick, so he went out and he threw it in the gutter and went back into the cafe, and sure enough, a woman came along, picked it up, and she tried to use it, wouldn't work, so she threw it away. Different child came along, picked it up, handed it to the woman. So years later, Chopek was telling this story, and he said, that umbrella is probably still circulating around in all the room. Here's a Father's Day appropriate tidbit for you. As I said, he had 11 children, 6 with his first wife, 4 with his second wife, and 1 with his third wife. He was widowed twice. Each time he was widowed, well, the first time he was left with 6 very young children, and the second time he was left with 8 fairly young children. When he was, in 1921, when he was about to come back to this, go back to Czechoslovakia from being in this country, he'd been in this country for 7 years, he went back to start, purposely to start, a Unitarian movement in Czechoslovakia. Leaving the United States in 1921 meant leaving some of their adult children behind, which of course made both parents sad. Čapek remarked that he was sorry to leave his grown children behind, with whom I have so happily lived all their life. Just has an amazing way with words. Čapek took the most amazing spiritual journey during his lifetime. Music was a very important part of that journey. He loved music, and he wrote more than 90 songs, 2 of which we're singing this morning, and we actually have in our possession a Czechoslovakian Unitarian hymn book that was given to us by one of Norbert Čapek's. This is usually hanging in the back, so if you want to take a better look at it, given to us by Lee Haspel, who's a member of this congregation. His grandfather is Norbert Čapek. I sort of spoke to Lee last night and to his wife. I'll tell you about that in a moment. Norbert Čapek was born on June 3rd, 1870, to Joseph and Marie Čapek. They were poor, but they weren't so poor that they went hungry, anything like that. Norbert was an only child. His mother was a Roman Catholic, and so Čapek would be raised in that faith, but he was greatly influenced by the faith of his father's side of the family, something that Norbert probably didn't realize for many years, how influenced he was by this other side of the family. Those Čapeks belonged to the Church of the Moravian Brethren, founded in the early 1400s, and very important to the Reformation. And don't ever let anyone tell you that Unitarian Universalism is this new age thing. I mean, we trace our roots way back. Well, talk about being way ahead of your time. The Moravian Brethren believed, and this is taken from written documents, in nonviolent resistance to evil, that Christian practice is more important than theology. In other words, they were concerned about how Jesus lived his life. They did not care about what happened on the cross or afterwards. Talking about going back to the 1400s here. They believed that reform of the church, especially of clergy, prerogatives and behavior, was urgently called for. Čapek's father, Joseph, was not fond of the Catholics. Nevertheless, Norbert became an altar boy. And there were some disturbing things that happened while he was altar boy. He could not reconcile this with the words of Jesus. For one thing, the priest that he usually worked with did not go with Norbert one day to a funeral service, and after the service, the family gave Norbert a penny, or a pastor a penny then. So Norbert went back and gave the priest the penny, and the priest was furious at Norbert for not getting more money, and he ranted and raved about, what do these families think? We just do these funeral services for fun? I don't think he was quite that way, but something similar. And then there was the little boy in Norbert's class, in this the catechism class or the religious classes, who hadn't done his homework and couldn't exactly explain the story of the Good Samaritan, at which point the priest who was teaching the class beat the boy. Things like this didn't sit well with Norbert. When he was 12, he was sent to Vienna, Austria, to continue his education and to train to be a tailor with his uncle, who was a well-known tailor there. Now, you can't understand a person unless you know the history of the times in which they lived or are living. So I'm sure you all brushed up on your European, especially Czechoslovakian history before this morning. Oh, didn't I put that in the newsletter? Of course, Vienna was the center of the Habsburg Empire. There was the anti-Semitism. There was one person high up in government who wanted to erase all traces of Jewish life. So this would have been 1883, 84. That didn't take, so to speak, at that time, but the writings of that person were used by Hitler. But Norbert just thrived in Vienna. He became bilingual. He was already, of course, a Czech speaker. He learned German. There were a lot of used bookstores in Vienna, of which he made great use. He read all the time, and he had more and more questions about religion. So he started to visit different Catholic churches, none of which impressed him, rather they depressed him. And he wrote about this later. He became friends with a Lutheran minister, and they had many, many, many long discussions about religion and the meaning of life and so on and so forth. Well, the Lutheran eventually introduced Norbert Čapek to the Baptists. Well, that was a huge turning point for Čapek. He thought that this was it. He finally found what he was looking for, and he was baptized in 1888. He went to Hungary as a missionary, and he was considered a dangerous for passing out Bibles. But they were the wrong kind of Bibles. They were Protestant Bibles. He was arrested for heretical activity in 1889. Also, in this time period, he started, at the invitation of the people in a small town, a Baptist church, which became very successful. In 1890, the Baptists offered him a little bit of money to go to Hamburg and the Baptist College and Divinity School. This was very important in his life for many reasons, but two main reasons. One, as Richard Henry puts it in his book, this led to a radical disturbance of Čapek's previous orthodoxy, the more he learned, and the professors were amazing. The second thing that happened here at the seminary was Čapek met Professor Walter Rauschenbusch. Anybody know that name? He was a visiting professor from the Rochester, New York Theological Seminary, and he was the founder and the proponent of the social gospel. Are there any social workers in the congregation? You should know this name, or if you know it. Rauschenbusch, talk about being way ahead of your time, called for an economic as well as a moral revolution as prerequisites for social justice. He maintained that capitalism was inhuman and anti-Christian. And he said it would be hard to imagine any other system would cause more injustice, more physical suffering, more heartache than the Industrial Revolution by which capitalism rose to power. Well, I sorry to tell you this, and you can arrest me for being a heretic, but I am a communist, and I agree totally with Rauschenbusch. The point of the social gospel, if I could summarize it in just a few words, was to create heaven on earth. Everyone would have equal access to whatever was going on economically. During this time at the Baptist Seminary, Norbert Čapek was studying Czech and Moravian history. Čapek had this amazing gift that enabled him to use the past while at the same time creating new forms of religious or sacred or spiritual expression. I just greatly admire this gift for many reasons, among them, because it keeps you from throwing out the baby with the bathwater, which Unitarian Universalists too often do. Čapek's goal became, after he'd been to a couple of international conferences, world patriotism. World patriotism, as well as world religion. See what I mean by him being way ahead of his time? He believed in the perfection of humankind. But then he began to ask himself if his Baptist faith would lead to that. And the answer for him was a resounding no. But then what? Where would he turn for a faith tradition? By the early 1900s, he did know about the Unitarians. The future president of Czechoslovakia, who was an acquaintance of Čapek's, Tomáš Masaryk, again, you'll have to forgive my pronunciation.
Mazurek.
Thank you. I've never heard it said out loud, I don't think. Certainly run across the name before. When he met Čapek, Masaryk said that Čapek sounded just like a Unitarian. And Masaryk was eventually able to introduce Čapek to the Reverend Charles Wendt, Secretary of the American Unitarian Association's Department of Foreign Relations. But as I said earlier, the Unitarians greatly disappointed Čapek when they finally met in the fall of 1910. And they didn't even respond. They didn't even send him a note about his appeal for funds and support. Masaryk said, "The Unitarian Church," and this is a direct quote, "the Unitarian Church is like a mother unwilling to nurse her own children." Some things never change. Did I say that out loud? Well, you can understand Norbert Čapek's remark in that farewell address in New Jersey over 10 years later about being disappointed in that congregation because they were very responsive to him and very warm and kind. Warned that he was probably going to be put in jail in 1914 because the Habsburg rulers thought he was dangerous, and offered a Baptist church in this country, Čapek went to New Jersey in June of 1914. And then, of all things, had to endure a heresy trial in this country in June of 1915. The powers that be, or were, in the Baptist church thought he wasn't orthodox enough. Plus, he was interested in phrenology, how the mind works, and psychology. I mean, Norbert Čapek, this is a quote of his, said, "The first object of a person's religion was his or her own sense of worth." So, of course, he got into these then new and eventually scientifically not so good areas. Well, the charges of heresy were dropped, and he was once again accepted as a minister in good standing, but he pretty much had it with the Baptists. So in September of 1919, he left the Baptist church. And then shortly thereafter was when the children went Sunday school shopping. Throughout his spiritual journey, Čapek was always able to draw on the roots of the Czech religion, as I said, especially the Reformation. He knew from his studies and his time with Rauschenbusch that the only true way to be on a spiritual journey was to ask the difficult questions, such as this one: who is controlling the economic decisions that will determine the country's future financial stability? He asked that when he returned to Czechoslovakia in 1921, when things were in such turmoil, but Masaryk was certainly on the side of the Unitarians and the other liberal religious folks. Čapek went on to say, "We must be concerned about who will make the greatest profit from trade." Now, those of you who know your history or did your homework know that the situation in Europe between the wars was, especially right after World War I, economically, it was a mess. And the Maya and Norbert Čapek had a terrible time finding any place to live that was affordable, but they were determined to start a movement. And within a few weeks after beginning to have services in rented space, I mean, they couldn't find a place to live, but they really couldn't find a big enough place to have meetings on Sunday morning. But they eventually did, and within a few weeks of beginning these services, crowds were waiting outside in the snow, because they were sharing the space with another religious group. So they were waiting to get into the Unitarian service, and then they were standing for the entire hour-long service. There weren't any chairs. Maya said that several people in Prague told her, "I have seen many a line, food, shoes, others like that during the war, but never have I seen a church line." There were those, however, in Prague in these early beginnings of the Unitarian movement there who felt
that the Unitarian services were punctuated rather too frequently with hearty laughter from the congregation. This was considered unseemly behavior for religious observance. But that Unitarian church in Prague just kept growing and growing, as did Unitarian churches in other cities in Czechoslovakia under Norbert Čapek's leadership. That church became, in Prague, the biggest Unitarian church in the world. It had 100,000 members. I've been puzzled over this for years before I read Richard Henry's book, and I guess I didn't do a good enough job with my history either. After World War I, I wonder how many of you know this, 1 million Czechs left the Roman Catholic Church. 1 million. They were so disillusioned with the government, with the church. Well, that, needless to say, created a vacuum. So what a wonderful opportunity to start a new religious movement. And as I said before, the president, Tomáš Masaryk, was on their side. I mean, nice to have the president of the country on your side. This was the period when Čapek had his first flower festival. Now last night when I talked to Sandy Haspel, Lee Haspel's wife, Lee is having trouble speaking. He's having trouble with his voice. So he didn't want to speak on the phone, although Sandy said it probably would have been fine, but he was self-conscious about it. He wrote down what he wanted. I had sent them a letter about doing the service this morning, and they wouldn't have come if their two daughters hadn't planned something for Father's Day. So that was, ooh, maybe they'll show up one day. But the one of the two things that Lee wanted me to be sure to let you know was that it was, and I think I said this to the children, it was never called Flower Communion. Norbert Čapek didn't have, he was as leery of the language of the Orthodox Church as we still are today. So even though communion and community come from the same root words, Čapek called it a flower festival, sometimes a flower service. But it was in this period of time that he had the first flower festival. I can't even begin to tell you, and I'd probably bore you to death, but it's fascinating the financial struggles they went through. The members were very generous, but they kept needing bigger and bigger space. And they finally bought their own space, and they finally not only was the American Unitarian Association supporting them pretty strongly by this time, but so were the British Unitarians. There's a wonderful passage that I don't think I'll take the time to read it to you now, but in the Richard Henry book about Čapek's views on religious education, but I have to make sure Rebecca sees it, because it's about educating the whole person and about the heart of religious instruction not being the rituals, even though Čapek liked his rituals, obviously, he started the flower festival. But as far as Christ was concerned, the teachings were important and how we live our lives. And that was the heart of religion, not the dogma, not anything else. It was a full service church, this big, huge Unitarian church in Prague. They offered classes on many nights. On Tuesday nights, the sermon was done again. And I've not been able to find out if Norbert Čapek gave it. I think he did. He gave it on Sunday morning, he gave it on Tuesday evening, and then there was a big discussion about the sermon. This building even had a vegetarian restaurant. Now, they're growing and growing and growing, but at the same time, anything that's seen as heretical views, was becoming more and more dangerous. And of course, things were getting darker and darker in Europe, especially Eastern Europe. In 1938, the Munich Pact, and Czechoslovakia is essentially handed over to Hitler. Martha and Waite Still Sharp, you might remember their names from the morning that Rebecca and I did a service about the Unitarian Universal Service Committee. The Sharps arrive in Czechoslovakia in 1939 to try to help refugees. In February of 1939, Maja Čapek goes to the United States by herself on a lecture tour and to raise money for the refugees and for all the problems in Czechoslovakia. March 15, 1939, the Germans occupied Czechoslovakia. Chopek and the Haspels, Lee Haspel's father, Karel, K-A-R-E-L, and his mother, whose name I can never say, were by this time co-ministers with Norbert Chopek in the big church in Prague. Chopek and both Haspels were given a way out by the American Humanitarian Association. Letters were written to get them past the borders, and they were offered positions in the United States. This is 1939. They refused. 1940, the Unitarian services by this time were under surveillance of the Gestapo. In June, Norbert Chopek turned 70. Huge celebration, many friends, lots of gifts. One of the gifts from his board of trustees, careful of that board, was a radio. Listening to foreign broadcasts was an offense punishable by death. That didn't stop Chopek from listening. In October of that year, 1940, Chopek was summoned to appear before the Gestapo. His response, anyone who was worth anything at all is either in jail or called for interrogation by the Gestapo. I'd have been ashamed if they'd not called me. He was released after only about an hour, and when he got back to church, he told his staff, they really welcomed me nicely, and they liked me so much, they almost kept me there. By this time, not only was the Gestapo surveilling the church, but when you came into the door of the building, you had to be okay by an SS officer. But still, attendance remained very high. One day, Chopek's youngest daughter, who lived with her parents, Zora, Z-O-R-A, not sure how you say it, she told a supposed friend about something she and her father heard on a BBC radio broadcast. The friend asked if she could type it up. And Zora said, oh, sure, because the friend said she wanted to show it to other people. Shortly after that, on March 28th of 1941, Chopek's home was invaded and their apartment ransacked. And that same day, Zora and Norbert were arrested. They were first held in Pankrac prison in Prague. Zora was later sent to Dresden prison, Norbert to a prison about 150 kilometers from Prague. Lawyers were hired. The first one was a fraud. And a mock trial was held in May of 1941. Apparently, a lot of lawyers were making a lot of money defending cases that were indefensible. The family found a better lawyer, and the charge of treason, especially, was dropped. They appealed, and then in the trial on April 1st, 1942, the Chopeks were found not guilty of treason. Norbert was found guilty of listening to the radio, but he received a one-year sentence, of which he'd already served 11 months. So this is unheard of, this kind of leniency from an SS court. Much happiness, as you can imagine, among family and friends. Within 1 month, Norbert Chopek was to be released. I invite you now to participate in the Flower Festival. And I'm not exactly sure how to do it. If you want to just come up and get a flower, or if someone wants to pass them around, of course I'm going to write it. And Terry, and and I will tell you a little bit about. A little bit of water is probably going to. I'm not very good with logistics. Let me just give you a few of Chopek's words about that first flower. I think that's cheating, Gary, but since you're our incoming president, what can I say?
He said he would share it.
That's all. He seems to have an entire tree. Chopek said, on the occasion of that first flower communion, we are trying to find new expressions of our religious life very slowly and carefully. we have made a new experiment with the flower service in symbolizing our liberty and brotherhood in a service which was so powerful and impressive that I never experienced anything like it. There are lots more flowers up here, and I'm not taking them home. Chopek said the most dry and rationalistic members were moved, and many an eye brightened through tears. One reason he wanted to do something like this was he wanted to show the rest of the world, the other churches, that we weren't all about the head, that we have heart, that we have ways to be moved, and that those are important. Chopek said, I put emphasis on the individual character of each member flower, on our liberty as a foundation of our fellowship. I emphasize our common cause, our belonging together as one spiritual community. And when you go home, take that flower just as it comes, without making any distinction where it came from and whom it represents, to confess that we accept each other as brothers and sisters without regard to class, race, or other distinction, acknowledging everybody as our friend who is a human and wants to be good. There's a point in this book where Richard Henry has a sentence that to me is almost a throwaway line. I had to go back and read it again. He sort of dismisses everything he's already told us about Chopek and his beliefs in human perfectibility by saying, well, that was then. And Chopek lived in a different time before the Holocaust and before these other terrible things. And so we don't believe that anymore. Yes, we do. I do. I do believe in the human perfectibility, good humanist that I am. So Chopek retained that belief through all those months in prison. I'd like to sing hymn number 78 now, Color and Fragrance. This was also written by Chopek, both the words and the music written by him. Now, the last sentence, it's number 78. The last sentence of each verse contains these words, God's vision growing. I hope we've reached a point at Prairie where we're comfortable with the word God, not allowing the use of the word to distract us from meaningful text, but realizing that God is a shorthand word and encompasses a range of meanings, including, of course, spirit of life, spirit of all it is, ground of all being, that which ultimately concerns us, or simply love. You can read the words of the last two verses when you have a chance. I'll share now with you once more the words of Norbert Chopek. It's easier for you to follow along. This is number 723 in the back of our hymnal. In the name of Providence, which implants in the seed the future of the flower, and in our hearts the longing for people to live in harmony. In the name of the highest, in whom we move and who makes the mother and father, the brother and sister, lover and loner what they are. In the name of sages and great religious leaders, who sacrificed their lives to hasten the coming of the age of mutual respect. Let us renew our resolution sincerely to be real brothers and sisters, regardless of any kind of bar which estranges us from each other. In this holy resolve, may we be strengthened, knowing that we are part of the universe's family, that one spirit, the spirit of love, unites us and endeavor for a more perfect and more joyful life. We Before we take the offering, I give you the end of the story of Norbert Chopek's life. On May 27, 1942, the Czechoslovakian underground and the government in exile carried out a plot to assassinate Reinhard Heydrich, known as the Butcher of Prague, a very cruel ruler of Czechoslovakia. Immediately after that assassination, Hitler ordered that 10,000 Czechs on the official blacklist be arrested. Most of them were killed. Then Hitler ordered that the entire village of Lidice, L-I-D-I-C-E, Lidice, thank you, I apologize. It was wiped out in 1942 for supporting and assisting the plot, even though it hadn't. Then all the villagers in another town, I'm going to try to pronounce it, were murdered. Unfortunately, Norbert Chopek was caught up in this vengeance because all sentences were the opposite of commuted.
Yeah.
Anybody that was supposed to be free was held. He then was sent to Dachau, where he did 3.5 months of hard labor. He was 72. He spent 14 weeks in Dachau. He had gotten there on July 5th, 1942. He saved many lives by both his attitude, which remained unbelievably upbeat, and his actions. He died on October 12th, 1942 at Hartheim Castle near Linz, L-A-N-Z, Linz, Austria. Now, Richard Henry says in this book that Norbert Chopek was gassed there, but Lee Haspel said, and this makes more sense, that his grandfather died because he had been a human guinea pig, and he eventually, well, by October of 1942, died from the injections that he had received. We come from amazing, an amazing, amazing heritage. The closing words are from Norbert Chopek. It is in our hands to use life and to adorn it with divine beauty and the light of immortality. But what do? We fill life with quarrels, animosity, tears, and vanities. What keeps us from creating a new world? We have invented the airplane. We have discovered the North Pole. But the most important thing is missing, that we might discover ourselves, that we might know ourselves and the meaning of our existence. Go in peace, greet your neighbors.